All right, I think we're ready to return.
Chris, did you start recording?
Yeah, could you tell from the shift in my voice? Yeah. Chris, you just finished carbo loading for this podcast. Do you think you're gonna be high energy?
That's so rude.
It's not. It's a value thing. Podcasting is tough. It's it's a difficult thing for us to do, and you want to come in high energy. So I respect that. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
We're back. High floor, low ceiling, 2024. The fourth calendar year that we have done this podcast in, technically. And it starts...
In the last, some are saying.
No, no one's saying that.
Sorry, when does it start?
Right now. Staying in so that people know how mean you are to me. And that ties into one of the things I want to get to in our intangibles here.
We'll go NFL
into
order. Playoff picks!
That's not intangibles, Chris. That's topic number one. If you had read
the
document...
Do you think Deshaun Watson was mean when he signed that big contract and then got himself hurt? Sorry.
Was he mean?
Yeah, was that mean of him to do?
What's his accent?
This is my new character. The sports radio.
Sports talk radio. I think Deshaun Watson, not the nicest guy in general. We'll put it that way.
Griffin, I hate to jump into topic one, but since we're already talking about it.
Well, no, you're trying to skip intangibles.
I don't want to skip intangibles. I'm happy to circle back. I just really quickly want to ask you, how do you think Miami is spelled? Because I see in this document...
Oh, God forbid I make a typo accidentally.
God forbid I eat lunch before we record this podcast.
I wasn't insulting you for eating lunch. It was a positive question.
And this is all staying in because we're going live to tape.
Yep. Yeah, no edits here. For those who don't have the privilege of looking at our Google Doc right now, I accidentally spelled the acronym for Miami, M-A-I, instead of M-I-A, and I will be tarred and feathered as appropriate.
And hey, AI is so big lately, so...
M-A-I. That's the Miami Dolphins AI. Chris, you called me an idiot 45 seconds into our first episode of 2024 and also threatened to end the podcast. So this brings me to our first intangible. How is Chris hoping to be better in 2024? It's a new year. New year, new you. Some are hoping, some are saying...
There's nothing, this is a tip for you.
Oh boy.
Nothing engenders positive feelings towards someone faster than them typing in a Google Doc, putting on the schedule, asking me how I'm hoping to be better in 2024.
I just thought if you had any resolutions you would like to share with the class.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that you're bad. I'm just wondering how you're hoping to be the best friend and podcaster that you can be in 2024.
Well.
Maybe relating to your treatment of me.
You know, some have said, got the Gryffindor shirt on, fascinating stuff.
I can't wear it in public, so I only wear it on days where I lounge around the house.
Thank you for being an ally.
Yeah, it's the least I can do.
I should send you a fan fiction I've been working on lately. Anyway.
I could go about 40 different directions and I will be sat and reading.
This is already too crazy.
2024 is the year of high floor, low ceiling.
What does that mean? You wrote that. 2024-, the year of HFLC.
That's about all I got. It's the year of HFLC. It's going to be a big year for us. I can feel it.
Do you think us being a podcast and naming a year is sort of working the my brother and me corner too much?
All I know about that is that there's someone on it named Griffin.
So true. You are kind of a Griffin. Well... No.
Griffin on blank check reminds me of myself.
To be honest, you're more of a Travis.
I have one friend who's going to know what that means and probably find it hilarious.
I hope they like it. Yeah, the year of HFLC. How do you think that that is going to come to pass?
Well, first of all, the energy in here is palpable.
The tension.
some are saying.
Some are comparing it to my fanfic in terms of the tension.
Well, I think that would be big for us if someone wrote a fanfic about us.
Actually, that sounds awful.
I'm going to say it would be an indication that we've really made it.
Certainly, it would be a positive sign for the fandom community surrounding HFLC.
There's some talented writers out there. Get out there, folks. Pound the pavement.
Don't say pound in relation to the fanfic.
You're the fanfiction expert. I only do. I'm gonna cut the bit.
No, finish the sentence.
No. Please. We're good. I could be a little more regular in the posting of TikToks and Instagram reels. That could help us. Some of those TikToks get views. I haven't posted one since everyone hated my Ryan Reeves take, but I was right. How many games has he played, idiots?
Now you should post that.
You can tell who's never played hockey at a high level. You can tell who's never been in a locker room before. Guess what? Doesn't matter. Ryan Reeves sucks.
He fought a guy sometime.
Once or twice. Guess what, Chris? Didn't change anything. Didn't matter.
But I'll have you know that he has a goal.
Chris, I could literally score a goal in the NHL faster than Ryan Reeves did.
250 tries.
I stand by that. The more you watch Joe Flacco out there this weekend and tell me that I couldn't do that. And I love
Joe strength, goal, and everything.
Someday when this podcast gets big enough, we are going to get me out there with 21 NFL players, 11 on defense and 11 on offense, and we are going to hash this out. It has to be in the next 10 years, so I'm still in my athletic prime. But
Ryan Reeves currently a minus 11 through 21 games of action.
21 games of action. And just as a quick check, how many games have the Toronto Maple Leafs played? Because it's more than 21, right? They've been willingly not having him play with them. 39 games. He's coming up to a 50% games played rate.
But Griffin, how many wins do they have?
Do they have 21 wins?
And what number does Ryan Reeves wear?
I don't
know. Trick question, 75.
Yeah. I knew it was a high one because they wouldn't give him one of the good ones.
High one, low ceiling.
The very same. Does this count as our NHL check-in?
I just quickly wanted to jump back and wanted to talk about the Oilers quickly. Okay. Just because we had that little conversation about whether they were cooked.
And
I don't remember what we said, but no, it seems that they're not cooked. Yes or no?
They don't seem cooked. They have more wins than the Toronto Maple Leafs in less games.
Fewer, but yes.
Oh, Chris, how are you hoping to be better in 2024?
I think I'm hoping to help my friends a little more.
Maybe learning to let the little things go.
Hey, I'm still hoping to catch that on FX one day. Denzel Washington, Jared Leto, Rami Malek.
Are you hoping to up your reference game in 2024 as well?
No, I think I'm actually operating at the peak of my powers. Just last night, I made a reference to how the Last Night in Soho and To Catch a Killer posters look similar.
Is Last Night in Soho the Edgar Wright one?
It is. I'll quickly send these images to you, but anyone who's present can enjoy this for themselves. The Last Night in Soho poster, and I will send you the To Catch a Killer poster, and go ahead and compare those for me. You'll see.
I'm riveted. To Catch a Killer, there it is. We got a floating head of, is that Shailene Woodley I'm looking at?
That is Shailene Woodley of Dumb Money and Ferrari fame. She had a big year.
Yeah. I didn't see Dumb Money, but I'm hoping to see Ferrari. These are kind of similar. They both have a big floating female head. But the Last Night in Soho poster has a lot of people on it. To Catch a Killer only has one other person on it. And it's Ben Mendelsohn, who is not on the Last Night in Soho poster. So that's a point against them.
Okay.
2024, folks, high floor, low ceiling has come to a screeching halt. listen, they're both kind of bluey red. I'll give you that. But overall, I think your reference game could be upped. in 2024.
Okay. Hey, here's a reference. Bluey. You said that, and that's also a show.
Yes. Now, this is what I'm looking for.
It's a little dog rectangle.
Good show. You ever see full clips of that show? I see it every once in a while.
Full clips?
Like a full, like, sort of 6-minute episode or whatever the kids are watching these days.
Is that how long the episodes are?
I think so. That's how long the one on cricket that I've watched a couple times is. Very good episode.
What is cricket?
The sport.
That's not true. And I want you to take it back.
What?
I want you to admit that the platform that you watch Bluey on is not cricket the sport.
Oh. No, I watch it on TikTok. It's an episode on cricket. The subject of the episode is cricket.
Okay. So, listeners, when I called Griffin an idiot...
The episode is on cricket. It's on the subject of cricket.
You're an idiot. Just end the episode.
I think I was clear.
You're a Slytherin, not a Gryffindor.
Actually, according to the quiz, I'm a Hufflepuff.
just quickly, that must have been a thing for you growing up, being named Griffin.
Gryffindor Potter. Yeah, I heard it a few times. Porter Potter.
Porter Potter.
Porter Griffin. Got that one as well.
Did you ever get Porter Potty?
No, because people liked me.
Great. Well, I just invented a new one for you.
Thanks. That's for anyone out there who doesn't like me. You can start calling me Porter Potty. Yes, Gryffindor was certainly a common thing for me growing up. I leaned into it. When I was young and I first got glasses, I got Harry Potter glasses. I was a big Harry Potter fan. Went as Harry Potter for Halloween one year.
Ooh, yeah. Let's take in.
Yeah. Listen, we didn't know
any better. One day you find your Draco.
Sports talk, Chris. It's out there.
We already talked about the Oilers. What more needs to be said?
Oh, I have the sniffles this episode, so if I sound a little different, that's why. I haven't adopted a new voice for 2024. I'm just a little sniffly.
This episode is so crazy.
Well, we're carbo-loaded. We're high energy.
I hate you. I don't care if that audio clipped.
It's not a bad thing.
Let's talk about NFL
playoffs. I did it before I ran my 10K last year.
You are being so cruel.
I literally... Listen, you ate lunch. There were carbs in your lunch, as there are in almost every meal. I made a joke about carbo loading. It's nothing. Mm-hmm. It's nothing negative. It's nothing derogatory. Mm-hmm. Yes, I wasn't seriously asking you if you had carbo loaded before the podcast because it's such a high energy affair.
Mm-hmm. Go on with your little podcast.
You're gonna sit here in silence for the rest of the episode. You're protesting.
You love. The podcast so much. Then you can do it.
I love this podcast.
I think it's excellent.
Yeah.
I think this one's especially good.
Yeah. It's a toxic relationship a little, but it is a deep and true love, like all toxic relationships have at their core.
That's a great way of putting it.
Clip that for TikTok.
Take that for TikTok.
Take that for data.
That was kind of what I was.
Yeah. I was just delighted to nail the reference.
A little bit of a sports nut.
A little bit, eh?
Talk about David Fizdale's post-game press conferences sometimes. That's just me. Hey, speaking of post-game press conferences, do you quickly want to... I guess we're just going to talk about the Raptors
segment. We can do it.
That would have been a perfect segue.
Yeah. Damn. We'll bring it back organically.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. I feel like pretty much...
On your segue? Or on the rant?
Both.
Thumbs up on both.
I thought it was awesome.
I was distracted because on the York Lions men's hockey broadcast the other night, I was doing it alongside my normal broadcast partner, Megan Phillips, who's great. And I made a segue on the broadcast. And then I said to Megan, I was like, that's what we in the broadcasting industry call a segue. And then in my head, I was like, I don't want to seem like I'm like assuming that my woman broadcast partner doesn't like know. So I'm like, not that I need to explain to you what a segue is. And then the play went on and I was like backtracking. It was a bad moment in what I think was an otherwise good call for me.
Oh no.
But I didn't want anyone to think, oh, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I'm striving to better myself in 2024. See? It wasn't just about you.
Furthering your personal brand.
I'm also hoping to read more.
Hmm. I know a great fan fiction you enjoy. Not published yet, but I'm working away steadily.
Well. All right. Playoff picks. Playoff.
Carl. You're too young for Jimmy Neutron, I know, but you're probably more into Planet Sheen.
I was a Johnny Test after school. Was that in your time frame?
It's on the later end. I don't think I really watched Johnny Test.
Mm, this is the life of a boy named Johnny Test. Danny Phantom. Mm. Now that was a good one.
Also, kind of like, I was on my way out.
Oh, you missed out on Danny Phantom. Teen Titans. That was one of my favorites.
Well, that's much earlier, but...
Well.
Maybe not much, but...
Yeah.
At any rate.
Chris, I really, really like the NFL playoffs. I don't know about you.
I feel like my whole thing, my big sort of beat on the season this year was that there were no good teams.
In the NFL?
Yes.
Okay.
That, like, there was no team that really, like, stood out as being like, this is an amazing team. This Super Bowl would be so awesome with this team in it. I don't not feel that way. Hope that little burp got caught on mic. But I do think that the season has perked up in its level of intrigue. Even though I do think like half the teams playing this weekend are just straight not good.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if 7 teams is too many to make the playoffs in the NFL. Should it be 4? 4 per conference? While it's quantity crazy. Is last?
Well, why can't we go back to how it was? Or what 6? If 5?
5, so you still get the first round bye? I think 5 would be... Oh, but then you got 3 in the next round. That's weird.
Well, you have a play-in.
Oh, a play-in instead of a play-off. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So 3 teams get the first round bye.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much of
a... Probably not a very interesting weekend to have
no, 2 games. No, just 2 games. But, all right, we'll stick with 7 for now.
I don't think our ideas are really cutting the mustard just yet.
Yeah.
But
there are two really good teams in the NFL this year, Chris, and they're the two teams that aren't playing this weekend. The 49ers and the Ravens have both been historically good. You doubted the Baltimore Ravens at the start of the year.
Sure the Ravens are that good?
Did you see them beat the 49ers by, like, 20? Or beat the Dolphins by, like, 40? Or beat the Lions by, like, 30? Or who else did they beat? They beat the Jaguars by, like, 30. They've clobbered everyone they've come across lately.
Lately, sure. Except the Steelers.
Well, they were resting everyone. They had clinched the number one seed in the NFL already. Because they're good.
Uh-huh.
First defense in NFL history to lead the league in points allowed, sacks, and turnovers all in the same season. First in history. Isn't that crazy? That's surprising.
The big run that you were so pleased about. The Bengals, the Chargers, the Rams, the Jaguars, the Niners, the Dolphins. That's their big run.
Rams, Jaguars, like, Dolphins, Niners is a very tough run of 4 teams.
There's like 2 quality wins in there.
3 of those teams are in the playoffs.
Yeah, but...
Still, to shellac the number one seed in the other conference, I think, was a statement win for the Baltimore Ravens.
They won by 2 touchdowns. At any rate, certainly the Baltimore Ravens, a quality team. I'm not sure if I would take them over, you know, a Kansas City Chiefs of the last few years.
Not of this year. This year, the Kansas City Chiefs suck. I'll say.
And yet, they might be good. They might win the Super Bowl. It's not impossible.
It's hard to count them out. Why don't we start with some of the less intriguing matchups? And by that, of course, I mean the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Buffalo Bills. In Buffalo, the Bills are 9.5-point favorites. Chris, we, of course, are going to be picking against each other. And then next week, we'll see how we did. I don't think we'll have a discrepancy here. I'm going to pick the Buffalo Bills to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. However, I don't think they'll cover, but that's not what we're doing here. We're not a gambling podcast.
Okay, because I was going to ask, are we picking against the spread here? Because the weather situation seems to be taking quite a turn in both the Buffalo game and the Kansas City game are both expected to have weather concerns.
Yes, Kansas City, I think, is supposed to be freezing cold. I'm just trying to quickly find the weather report for Buffalo, New York. Buffalo snow, as my Uncle Jeff likes to call it. Buffalo this weekend, it's currently 6 degrees, feels like 2. On Sunday, it's -2, feels like -8, with a 76% chance of snow. So yeah, that seems like it'll...
Celsius or Fahrenheit on those numbers?
Celsius, of course. We are a Canadian podcast. So yeah, that'll be cold. That'll be unpleasant to play in. And like you said, Chris, I think that'll lend itself to a closer game. And the Pittsburgh Steelers like to roll around in the muck, you know? They're a good running the football team. They're a good defensive team. So, bad weather seems to suit them.
Sure. Certainly, you know, they have the defensive element. But I feel like whenever you think about the Pittsburgh Steelers, whenever you watch the Pittsburgh Steelers, you're like, are they good at anything?
Well, these past few years especially, they really do not seem like they have a good football team, but they somehow manage to make the playoffs every year, squeak in there.
So it's like my chair was squeaking there. I feel as though, well, certainly, like, you know, the last couple of years, the defense has really been there. They don't have TJ Watt for this game. It would seem like even if they were, you know, it were to turn into a snowball kind of game, I don't think it's easy to see the path for them to get there, because the Bills have Josh Allen. Like, they have, if you want to, you know, put him among quarterbacks, then I would say he's probably I hate to say it in front of you, but probably the best rushing quarterback in the NFL.
The best rushing quarterback in the NFL? I could see the best overall quarterback in the NFL, but the best rushing quarterback in the NFL?
I think...
best Russian quarterback, maybe. I don't know if he is.
I don't know his ethnicity. But I just feel like, especially I'm thinking of like a snow kind of game. Maybe I'm, you know, talking out of my you-know-what here. But I feel like I saw him make some runs during that must-win game in Miami, Griffin, where he was, like, breaking tackles.
Listen,
like,
he's an amazing rusher. I'm not going to – he's probably the second-best rushing quarterback in the NFL.
And so just that combination of, like, size, ability to break tackles, like, I think a physical game might be suited to him.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. He's a big boy. He's dating.
He's not necessarily
Haley
someone
Steinfeld.
Who's sure. That's someone whose treat. Game, whose rushing game, is predicated on elusiveness or like change of direction or things like that.
He's a run through you more than a run by you type of guy.
He is a power rushing quarterback, which I think would be more beneficial for a snow game than a speedy running quarterback. More of a Vic.
Yeah. I mean, this is all a long way to say that we're both picking the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I think so. I'm glad we spent as much time as possible on that one.
You have it turned into you continuing to disrespect the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And that will not stand. Not on this podcast. All right, Chris, what's the next most boring option here? It's probably the Philadelphia.
You think that's the most boring option?
It's the biggest point spread. These are some close spreads for the preliminary weekend of the NFL playoffs.
But I kind of feel like I'd rather watch that game. Well, okay, here's my take.
Well, I'll be watching as many of the games as I can, because once again, I love the NFL playoffs.
If you're picking one favored team who is definitely going to lose, who are you picking? If you're picking one old quarterback whose luck will really run out this weekend, who would you go for?
I feel like you're trying to imply the Cleveland Browns, but I don't think that the Browns are like a lock to lose against a rookie quarterback in a very young team in Houston. Cleveland has this elite defense. Like, I could see the Browns sort of nickel and diming their way to winning that game. I don't think there are really any huge locks in this,
I suppose,
playoffs.
So it really feels like, it just really feels to me like almost like they wait Trevor Lawrence, he won a playoff game last year, right?
No, didn't they have... Yes, because the Chargers had that massive collapse against the Jaguars.
It feels like one of those kind of things, almost. Not that there's going to be massive class, but, like, the young player who sort of, like, has the coming out party. Because I think a lot of people, like, maybe... Well, that's not entirely true. But I think that it's a situation where we're going to see a coming out party. And then also you compound that with the fact that the Browns' offense is so suspect, I think, is a recipe for, like, sort of, like, the upset that everyone thought would be an upset, so it's not really an upset.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Houston, technically the home team in that one. Is that the one you want to talk about next? I feel like we're already kind of in it already. C.J. Stroud, been a phenomenon this year. The second overall pick seems a lock for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Houston has this fun wide receiver core made up of guys who, like, maybe aren't huge names, but through C.J. Stroud, they've all become weapons and the great work of head coach D'Amico Ryans. So I'm going to take the Texans in that one. Technically an underdog, Chris, as we mentioned, the Browns, 1.5-point favorites, which is the narrowest margin of any of these playoff games, but it is in Houston. So I'm going to take the Houston Texans to win that game and get C.J. Stroud's career started with a bang.
It also just surprises me why the Browns would be favored. Like, I know the Browns have been winning, but, like, and I guess I think really the only thing you can really say that would contribute to them being favored is they have a win over the Texans.
Yeah, that's certainly
which was factors what, in. Two was, weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, was C.J. Stroud playing in that game?
Let's just double check that.
Because he's been in and out with injury, so we'll double check that quickly. And I think the Browns, they do say defense wins championships, and the Cleveland Browns are an excellent defensive squad. But like you said, Chris, that offense is shaky. Joe Flacco, certainly an elite quarterback back in the day, but nowadays, father time, maybe starting to catch up a little bit. He's been hot. He's still had the genie left in the bottle, but the clock strikes midnight eventually. I'm trying to think of more cliches.
That was, of course, a Case Keenum start, Griffin.
Okay, so I'm going to throw that out a little bit. I'm going to take the Houston Texans.
Case Keenum completed 11 passes for 62 yards.
For the Houston Texans?
And 2 interceptions before he was replaced by Davis Mills.
Ooh.
So, yes, like you said, not maybe the most indicative, but, like, so then what are we saying is the case for the Browns?
I think their pass rush and Myles Garrett makes C.J. Stroud very uncomfortable. As we mentioned, he's been sort of in and out with injuries this year. We don't know if he's 100%. If they can force him to move, not let him get time to get his receivers open, I think that's sort of the case for the Browns. Maybe an interception or a fumble, win the game through defense.
Yeah, but like
Amari Cooper goes crazy saying, like, again.
Sure. I guess I'm saying not less what's the path for them, because I can see a path. I see what you're saying, certainly. And more, what have they done that justifies them being favored on the road against the Texans, who have had, you know, a solid second half to the season themselves. But you look at the people that, because, you know, Cleveland was sort of like, oh, they're like the sort of, not miracle team, but sort of an upstart team. Joe Flacco's comeback story is a fun story. But you look at the teams and it's like, they beat the Jaguars, they beat the Bears, they beat the Texans without C.J. Stroud, they beat the Jets. Like, they're not.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. But I guess it's just the momentum and sort of the Cinderella energy that has people betting on Joe Flacco. And also, he's a proven winner. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's a Super Bowl champ.
Of course.
He knows how to go out there and get the job done. He's going to the Hall of Fame for sure by the time
all is said and done. I almost just brought that up because I think that is one of the dumbest conversations of all time.
No, Joe Flacco's probably not a Hall of Famer.
That zero-time Pro Bowler, Joe Flacco.
All right, so seems like you are also picking the Houston Texans, Chris.
I think so. I'm a believer in the Texans. And I think that this would just be such a thing. I feel like the Cinderella story that everyone talks about is never the Cinderella story that ends up panning out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think C.J. Stroud is like, this Texans team is good. They're quite good.
C.J. Stroud is terrific.
Yeah. All right. The next one, I think that is probably the most open and shut, even more open and shut than Cleveland and Houston, I would say, is the Green Bay Packers rolling into the football mecca of the world, Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Is that what it's called? No, it's called like AT&T Field.
I don't think it's called the Cowboy Football Stadium in Arlington.
I did not say Cowboy Football Stadium.
They, of course, play at AT&T Stadium, Griffin.
Yes, Titletown, USA rides in to take on America's team. The TV ratings will be through the roof for this one, Chris. Sure. You know that. Do you believe in the Dallas Cowboys?
No.
Interesting.
But I mean, like, it's the Cowboys. I feel like this conversation is had constantly every year. But the thing, the Green Bay Packers are almost like the NFC Steelers, where you watch them and you're like, are they good at anything? They don't. I mean, like, Jordan Love is a better quarterback than anyone the Steelers might have.
Oh, I thought you were going to say than Dak Prescott.
Well, can't rule that out. But it's like, are they a great defense? No, I don't think you could go that far, certainly. Do they have great receivers? I don't think you could say that. Do they have a great run game? I don't think you could say that. Maybe you could say that they have a great run game. But
yeah, I think the 1-2 punch of Jones and A.J. Dillon, having Aaron Jones healthy, is a big deal for them.
But a little disappointing, I think you'd say, compared to what they've done in other seasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you just, there's nothing to really be excited about. And in the same way that, you know, we talk about Cleveland, how we saw their path because they have that elite element in one facet of their game, that it's like, oh, well, if this facet ends up becoming the most important facet of the game, then you can see the path for them to win because they do exceed in that area. Whereas with the Packers, it's like, what do the Packers do better than the Cowboys?
I would say nothing.
Right. So.
So it sounds like you believe in the Dallas Cowboys.
It's not a matter of belief. It's a matter of relative unbelief. I would say there are a lot of bad NFC teams, though. But any real team, I don't think I'd believe in the Dallas Cowboys against.
All right. Well, that might be a conversation for next weekend, because for this weekend, Chris, I'm going to say, how about them Cowboys? I think they handled the Packers without too much trouble. I do think that this is a good team, as it has been every year for the past couple of years.
Well, that's the thing, is that there are teams, you know, we talk about this all the time with the freezer, is like, there are teams that are less than the sum of their parts, and that without any basis in fact, you can kind of say, well, that team's not going to win, and you're almost always going to be right. I think the counterpoint, or like the comparison point, is the Timberwolves this year, where the Timberwolves are the number one seed in the West right now. And it's like, do you think the Timberwolves are going to the conference finals, Griffin?
Well, I famously had them not making the play-in. So I'm going to say no. Going to
the right. But it's like, that's allegedly the best team in the West.
Yeah.
But the playoffs
is different.
Exactly. And so you just can't buy into them. And the Cowboys are like the kings of you can't buy into them, because we've seen so many years of them failing to do as well as they seem like they should based on just how good the team is overall.
I couldn't agree more. While we're on the topic, shout out to a couple of big Cowboys fans, Victoria Hocko, great friend of the show, and Liam Bullen, if he's listening as well. How about them Cowboys? All right, Chris, let's keep it in the NFC and pick up the pace a little bit. Matthew Stafford returns to the Motor City Los Angeles Rams at Detroit Lions. The Lions, a 3-point favorite. Chris, speaking of belief, do you believe in the Detroit Lions?
They have not made it easy.
The most hapless franchise, and if not for the Cleveland Browns, I suppose, the most hapless franchise in football for many years.
I think I do believe in them. The Rams have not shown anything to make me believe that they're the team that's going to surprise a lot of people. You know, the Lions are not have not done a lot to inspire over the last few weeks, but I do still think that they are ultimately a good team. And I think that this would make sense for them. Like, this has sort of been the way that their trajectory is going. And I think that they're at least win a playoff game good, especially when they, I feel like they've drawn quite a favorable matchup here. They should be able to shut down this offense. They should be able to run on this defense. They should be able to win this game.
I think so. I'm shocked that the Rams made the playoffs at all. Do you think that the city of Detroit loves Matthew Stafford so much, as we know from good friend of the show, Connor O'Neill, who we'll have to have on for a Super Bowl preview in just a few weeks, as always. Do you think that the city of Detroit loves Matthew Stafford so much that they will not make it a hostile environment for him and that will play into the Rams' advantage? Like, they just won't be able to make noise when the Rams are on offense and stuff.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
It'll be like a home game for the Rams because he's so
good. I don't think it'll be like a home game for the Rams. I think if I were to guess, I don't really know how much Lions fans get up for a big game. Haven't really seen them play a lot of big games.
I have a feeling Ford Field's going to be pretty crazy.
That is my feeling as well. In the same way that, you know, 5 years ago, the Bills, when they like sort of came back into the playoffs, that people got excited about that. I think it's the same kind of, you know, New York state of mind, Northeast energy.
Okay, interesting. I'm sure people from Detroit will love that comparison. All right, let's go now to our other road favorite, the Philadelphia Eagles. They get to skip the cold weather. They get to head down to sunny Tampa, Florida to take on Baker Mayfield and his Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Chris, the Philadelphia Eagles may have broken a wing or something because they are in free fall.
Great intro.
Thank you.
I know we said we were on speed around here. I mean, in the same way that, I talked about the sort of the idea that the Rams haven't shown me enough to believe that they're the team that's going to do something. I feel like the Eagles did show me enough, especially in the first half of the season, obviously, to believe that they could be a team to do something, to believe that they could be a team that sort of rallies from a hapless ending to the season and turns it into something. And again, like I was saying with the Lions, talk about a team that drew a favorable matchup. I think Tampa is probably the worst team in the playoffs, right? You'd say
them or Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Yeah. Like super suspect. Their offense could easily just completely crumble. Like if you told me on Tuesday that, oh yeah, they scored 3 points in this game.
Yeah.
And that like they lost like 26-3, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, it's certainly an interesting situation there. It feels like there's a lot of pressure with the Eagles, certainly, but I certainly have not seen enough from Tampa to say that they could be an upsetter, and I feel like the Eagles showed enough that they can be, when they're in form, a Super Bowl level team.
Yeah, I think the Eagles got very, very lucky with this matchup. I think against either of these other two home teams in the NFC, the Lions or the Cowboys, they would be in big, big trouble. But this, I think with all due respect to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who won the worst division in football and got a home game as a result, I think that this is basically a get-right game for the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, I don't think you could have asked
this
for...
This is like a warm-up.
Yeah, for a better matchup for a team that's been struggling so badly lately. Like, this is just an opportunity for them to go out there, get their momentum back under their own feet, remember that they are the Super Bowl finalist Philadelphia Eagles, the reigning NFC champions, and I think that this will put them right, and I would expect a double-digit win. I'm shocked that they're only 3-point favorites, and I could see them like coming into next weekend's game on the road again with a lot of momentum.
Yeah, and it always feels difficult for me, at least, to make a prediction like that, because those are the exact kind of predictions
where blow up.
When the big upset happens, it's like your voice is over the montage.
I would love that's 2024, the year of high floor low ceiling.
That would be good. Timberwolves, you want to be on Old Takes Exposed?
Yeah. Think about the clout.
Absolutely. But yes, I agree with you. I think it should be, if the Eagles are anything like what we thought they were they should win this game easily.
Agreed.
Thank you.
And that's then, one way of saying they are who we thought they were. That's what we'll be saying next weekend.
And then Miami, Kansas City, or Mai, as you call them, Griffin.
Well, Chris, we have picked in lockstep every single step of this playoff round so far, and we've got one left to go. And this may be where we go the opposite way, because I'm going to pick the Miami Dolphins to come into cold, windy Kansas City and run all over, both figuratively and literally, the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that this offense is too good, and I think that with all due respect to Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs' offense is not ready for a playoff game. I think that they have no reliable receivers, arguably including Travis Kelce, who certainly looks like he has lost a step this year through, I mean, no fault of his own. Most tight ends have been retired for 5 years by the time that they get to the age Travis Kelce is, so it had to happen eventually. I don't buy into any sort of distraction narrative. I think that's stupid, but I think he's older now, and there's no one else for defenses to pay attention to, and he's been pretty easily taken out of a lot of games. I think that the Dolphins have just as good of a coaching staff as the Eagles, and I think that, or the Chiefs, pardon me, and I think that Tyreek Hill is going to go out there and put on a show against his former team in his former stadium and take it to the Kansas City Chiefs.
I definitely see the argument, Griffin. I think you're right that people do sort of underrate the fact that the Dolphins, even though they have such a high octane offense, it's not predicated very much. And, you know, obviously you think of Tyreek Hill as like the ultimate deep ball threat, but he's also the ultimate, like, or at least the Dolphins along with the 49ers have been the ultimate yards after catch
offense. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing with Tyreek Hill. You get him on a slant route 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage and no one can catch him. Like,
right. And so they aren't predicated on needing a deep ball to do damage. They do have an explosive rushing attack. At the same time, I feel like they're the opposite of the Eagles in my mind, where both of those teams are teams that started tremendously hot and then had this difficult finish, and you're left to weigh whether was the first half the mirage, was the second half the mirage. My feeling on the Dolphins is that they had an obscenely like huge offensive start that they weren't really, other than, obviously they famously had the 50 point win, they scored 70 against the Broncos when the Broncos were absolutely floundering. Do they have a signature win?
I guess it would be that 70 point win.
Yeah, right.
that would be the signature, I suppose, but that was a long, long time ago.
And they have a win against the Cowboys, and I think that would be the other big one to point to, but I think that that's maybe a sign. If your signature win is that you beat up a terrible defensive team in week 3, and then since then you have one win that could really be considered like, that was a great win. And, you know, you have all of these sort of questionable games towards the end of the season. Oh, wait, hold on. No, I am looking at the... I was briefly terrified that I was looking at the wrong schedule, but I was looking at the right schedule. The thing about Travis Kelce, I certainly think your point is valid there, Griffin. The counterpoint would be, we've seen the Chiefs win games with terrible, like, with nothing other than Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes around them. We've seen them win a Super Bowl with basically not much other than
Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes around them. Has there ever been this not much? Like, this year, the Kansas City Chiefs wide receivers are actively hurting the team.
I guess, like, is it that different from last year?
Just when you speak on signature wins, Chris, I'm just
scrolling. Juju Smith-Schuster?
I think he's a
difference
solid
maker for them.
So the Chiefs' wins this year are against the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Chicago Bears, the New York Jets, the Minnesota Vikings, the Denver Broncos, the Los Minnesota Angeles Vikings Chargers. Stop me when you hear a playoff team. The Los Angeles Chargers, and then they lose to the Broncos. They beat the Miami Dolphins 21-14. That's the big one. And then the Raiders, they lose to the Packers, they lose to the Eagles, they lose to the Bills.
They play the Eagles close. They play the Bills close.
They beat the Patriots, they lose to the Raiders, they beat the Bengals without Joe Burrow, and they beat the Chargers by one without Justin Herbert.
You're not wrong.
That's not an impressive season to me.
You're not wrong. These are both kind of similar teams, where it's like...
The talent is there. The team is there. Well,
yes.
The Chiefs have one guy. Maybe two guys.
I will also say that having, generally speaking, from what we've seen, having a really good defense is... It's easier to have a really good defense and then hope on some sort of explosive playoff games from your stars on offense than it is to have an explosive offense and hope for
your defense to step up.
Your defense to suddenly really step up. And that is has been Miami's biggest problem all year. And they're really injured on defense. So
no Jalen Waddle either. So the injury bug may come back to right to bite the Dolphins, but we're splitting this one, Chris. I am going with Miami. You are going with Kansas City, and we collectively are going on a break. We will be back in just a few minutes to talk the Toronto Raptors. They're looking very different from the last time we saw them, so stick around. We'll be right back in literally like 5 seconds. And we're so back. Had a lovely break. Chris, I got myself a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
I exchanged a couple texts with a friend of mine here.
Drink on mic. Slurp, slurp.
You should start a podcast.
Bevy of Bevies.
Beverages. Yeah. That would be a good one.
Yeah. You could call it Beverly of Beverages.
Do you feel bad that all your other podcast partners have dropped out of your life and I'm the one you're stuck with? We used to have like a strong group
dropped
of three.
Dropped out of my life.
Yeah, your brother and your good friend Colin don't speak to you anymore, correct?
I famously watched Aloha with Colin yesterday.
I saw that on Letterboxd. You liked it less than Colin did.
Absolutely. I think it would be hard to like it more than Cullen did, is what I'll say on that film.
Interesting, interesting. Real cultural, lasting cultural memory on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, we got to talk Toronto Raptors, because the last time we talked Toronto Raptors, they looked very, very different. They were a lot more monotone. They smiled a lot less. There wasn't as much skipping. Sure. And there was a lot more defense and a lot less offense.
Sure. All true.
The Raptors traded, for those of you who are not paying attention, OG Anunoby, along with Precious Achiuwa and Malachi Flynn, in exchange for Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett from the New York Knicks. Torontonian, Mississaugian RJ Barrett returns home to the team that he grew up cheering for. How old did it make you feel to see RJ talking about when he was a young kid going to watch Jose Calderon and DeMar DeRozan? Because that made me feel old, so I can't imagine how old it made you feel.
Isn't he like the same age as you?
He's like three
years
younger
than
me. Yeah.
Doesn't seem that much. Yeah, I mean, it's
different.
It's definitely different. It is funny to me. The one thing I will say about the trade is the whole thing that seems to be like really getting pushed right now, and I understand it based on like when you actually watch the Raptors play, because it was really unfun to watch the Raptors play before the trade, and it is a lot more fun to watch them now.
Yes.
But the whole thing that people seem to be pushing is like, oh, both teams are so happy with the trade. Like, everything turned out great because both teams, like, got better and they're both really happy right now. And it's like, the Knicks have been, have like, won 5 straight games. They just lost, but to the Mavericks, without Luka Doncic, I will say.
Yeah, rough look.
But they were just on, like, a very nice win streak, had a win over the Timberwolves, had a giant win over the Sixers. And then the Raptors are like, they're 500.
They're not miserable.
Yeah, it's like, they beat the Cavs by 3, they beat the Grizzlies by 5. They won against the Warriors, who are losing every game right now. So I think that people sort of maybe overstate a little bit the both teams are happy narrative, but I do think that both teams are happy, especially considering that OG is an expiring contract. I'm guessing probably wouldn't have re-signed or would have re-signed for more than what he would have been worth to the Raptors. And in return, the Raptors got RJ Barrett and the privilege of re-signing a player who's probably going to be a little bit overpaid.
Okay, so there's a starting point. You think Emmanuel mm-hmm. Quickly. You're down on Emmanuel Quickly. You think he's terrible.
I like the way you think. No, I think I like Emmanuel Quickly a lot. Do I think Emmanuel Quickly could be a starter on a championship team?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's nice.
But it's like fringe. And for someone who you could be paying like $25 million a year or more, is that really what you want?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that sounds good then. I certainly like it a lot better than the prospect of paying Gary Trent Jr. $20 to $25 million a year. I'll say that much. But it's easy to see a future where the Raptors sort of become hamstrung by these sort of what are going to be event, like, you know, within the next few years, mid-sized contracts, you know.
Yeah, I think as we got a new TV deal coming up, hopefully the cap will continue to rise. And I think that paying Emmanuel Quickly $25 to $30 million a year, who knows if the Raptors are ever true blue championship contenders in the next 5 to 6 years, but I don't think it will be a huge burden on the team to do that.
Right. I don't think that contract in and of itself will be a huge burden. I think that it's easy to see a world where having like 5 of those contracts turns out to be a huge burden. I would be pretty surprised if they re-signed Trent, but they also seemed quite hot on re-signing him going into the year. We kept hearing like there could be an extension any day now. Like,
yeah, but he hasn't want to re-sign him. A great season.
No, he has definitely deflated his value some. But it's like, you know, they have an RJ Barrett contract that's in the high 20s. They have a Jakob Poeltl contract that's 20, right?
Ish, yeah. Or maybe it's exactly 20, yeah.
They have an Emmanuel Quickly contract that's going to be, I'd say, minimum $20 million, you'd think.
Yeah. And that brings us to one big contract question that still looms over the Toronto Raptors. Pascal Siakam is right. A pending free agent. Some have said that this trade of OG Anunoby means it's inevitable the Raptors will trade Pascal Siakam. Others have said that they were only ever going to re-sign one or the two, so now they've clearly chosen Pascal Siakam. Your thoughts?
Sorry, what was the question?
You really have gotten good at tuning me out. First of all, I just want to say what I like about this OG Anunoby trade is that they've done what what we've been begging the Raptors to do for a while now, and that's choose a path. They have chosen the Scottie Barnes path.
Yeah.
They now have got two good players who are within like 3 years of Scottie Barnes' age.
Yeah.
And I think that's a step in the right direction and a clear sign of where this franchise should go. The Pascal Siakam question, Chris. Some people have said the trade of OG Anunoby means that they will also trade Pascal Siakam. Others have said they were only ever going to re-sign one of them. They clearly chose Pascal. Now they're going to sign him. Do you believe that Pascal Siakam will be traded or sign an extension with the Raptors? Because I don't think it'll be anything else.
I will say, Griffin, just as a little bit of a little bit of nugget to throw in here, that I was just looking on Twitter during the break. And I saw a tweet from someone by the name of Mavs Film Room, who is secondhand reporting that Chris Haynes, live on the Bleacher Report app, which is apparently a place that one can be, says that he has heard, and I'm quoting here, that Pascal and Siakam and the Toronto Raptors are on the verge of parting ways, and that there's a high likelihood that Siakam will be traded.
Okay, so does that, I imagine that influences your answer.
It certainly makes me lean more towards him getting traded. I can still see both paths quite clearly.
Yes.
I think that a point I saw online that I thought was very valid is like, and I don't normally subscribe much to like the sort of sentimentality angle, but the idea that there is, if not a franchise player, certainly a star player seems to really like playing for the Raptors and seems to want to re-sign with the Raptors. It feels like, you know, and obviously we don't know the particulars. We don't know with any certainty that he, you know, is looking for an extension, is looking to re-sign, whatever. But if they are in that situation, it would be a frustrating thing to then be like, no, actually, we don't want this player that wants to play for us, which is, as most Raptors fans know, quite a rarity.
It is a rarity for sure, Chris. And Pascal Siakam, I think without question, one of the all-time great Raptors. Mm-hmm. Like, and an all-NBA level player, it's very, very tough to imagine giving up on him. I think it's sort of a case where, much like with OG Anunoby, as soon as he gets out of Toronto, casual NBA fans will realize just how good he actually is. But the problem for me is that I have no problems with Pascal Siakam. I love Pascal Siakam. He's one of my all-time favorites, except for the fact that he was born in 1994. He's 29 years old. He's going to be...
You hate that.
Yeah, I hate people born in 1994 in particular.
And 1995.
Is that you?
When I was,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, that there's really only one 95 that I hate.
What does that mean? Is that me?
No, I was trying to say someone else, but I don't know anyone else born in 1995. I don't tend to associate with that ilk.
Andrei Burakovsky.
He wears number 95. Yeah, Pascal Siakam's 29. He will turn 30 in 3 months' time. He will turn 30 before the end of the season. Scottie Barnes is 22. RJ Barrett is 23, and I think that is the Toronto Raptors. I think Scottie Barnes now is the Toronto Raptors. I love Pascal. I would love for him to be a Raptor for life. I've got his jersey hanging in my closet, but I think you have to divorce yourself from that as much as it sucks and as much as you're right that players generally don't want to be Toronto Raptors or stay with the Toronto Raptors. I think they have one, and they have to let him go.
I see what you're saying. I think that the idea that you can succeed with a bunch of guys who are similar in age and not really have an old guy, I feel like that's kind of a recent development. Like, the Nuggets kind of did that. But then, like, you know, you think about, like, the Celtics of the last few years, where they've had Al Horford as, like, a key cog in that machine. Even to a lesser extent, I don't think Drew Holiday is that old, but Brook Lopez is another kind of guy where it's like, he was older when he came to the Bucks. He fit in with this core of guys who were significantly younger than him and has continued to play well. He's now pushing 36. Still, but obviously.
It's the contract. Is he on a max contract, like, or near to it? Because I think that's what Pascal Siakam will want from the Toronto Raptors.
I think Al Horford is on a rather large contract, and I think he's not on a huge contract. No, it's fair. But point being, I don't think it's impossible to do both.
Right.
I don't think that going with a younger guy as your primary star means that you have to then trade every player who's older than him. I know that's not what you're saying. I see your point.
But you're using hyperbole to drive your point home, and you're doing it well.
thank you. It's very kind of you. But yes, so that I wouldn't be upset if they re-signed Pascal Siakam.
I wouldn't be upset at all. I'd question if it's the right basketball move.
Well, they seem to be, so you sort of talked about the idea of them choosing a path. I still think that they are in the same place they were to some extent. And I do think that the team being less ugly to watch has sort of obfuscated some of that. It's very reminiscent almost of 2 years ago when they, sort of reworked the team, had a nice run going in towards the end of the season, ended up in the playoffs, sort of overperformed relative to people's expectations, and that ended up like being a season people were happy with. It still feels like they're running in that in-between space where they're trying to get an 8th seed. They're not trying to be the 15th seed. They're not trying to be the 1 seed. They're trying to be in the playoffs. And some fans want that. Some fans might not feel as positive about that. I'm personally kind of mixed on that. So it still doesn't feel like they have a plan for where will this team be in 5 years, and how are the moves you're making today helping you get towards that goal?
Okay, so yeah, so that was obviously something notable. The Raptors did not take draft picks for OG Anunoby. They They preferred young quality players. Are you saying you think that they made that move and that choice with the hope of competing this year in mind? Maybe not front of mind, but that was one of the factors for them.
I think the fact that, and I don't really think that there was a better package out there, I will say, but I do think that they are thinking about this year. I do think that if they were to completely drop out of the playoff picture this year, that that would be a disappointment, that that is not what they're trying to do. And, you know, they're the 12 seed right now. They're, I think, 2 games back of Brooklyn now, because Brooklyn has a game in hand, something like that. They're within striking distance, certainly, of a play-in spot. But that doesn't... It feels like they sort of... Less that they reset the timeline and more almost that they reset the narrative of, like, suddenly people are getting excited again about the prospect of, like, we could be in the play-in. We could be an 8 seed. Like, we could be hosting a play-in game. And that's what people are getting excited about. Which feels... And then last year, the whole thing was, like, why are we going to the play-in? Like, what is the long-term benefit of going to the play-in?
Right. Well, do you think, like, that seems like if people were to be excited about it, I think it's because the team now does feel younger with the addition of 2 core members of the future under the age of 25. So it's now more of a sign of things to come than a sign of where things are right now. That's the other thing about trading Pascal. The Raptors are currently 7th from the bottom in the NBA. Their first round pick this year is top 6 protected. But the thing is, are they much worse? Like, the 6 teams below them are Memphis, Portland, Charlotte, San Antonio, Washington, and Detroit. Even with trading Pascal Siakam, it doesn't seem like they're going to tumble into that bottom 6, which means they would have to rely on lottery luck. So I don't think that that's going to be a big part of their thinking this year. I think they sort of have to see this first round pick as gone. As I sim the lottery right now, they get the 8th pick. So that would be gone. Let me try it one more time. 8th pick again. So there you have it. The Raptors, I think that first round pick is gone, and that's why it seems like they got that Detroit Pistons 2nd round pick, which seems like it'll be 31st overall. So I guess if you don't have a first round pick this year, might as well try for the play-in?
I guess so. I think it's easier to say might as well try when you have a bunch of players that are in their early 20s, as opposed to a bunch of players that are in their late 20s. I think it's a lot easier to make that calculus and see the value in going to the playoffs, because if it's Pascal Siakam, like, what is Pascal Siakam getting out of going to the play-in? And if they're lucky, playing 6 games, probably. At most, you're playing 9 games, because they're not winning a first-round series. Like, let's be realistic.
Right.
And so, is there a ton of value in that for a Pascal Siakam or someone who has been a legit contributor on a championship team before? I think it's safe to say no, not really.
No. Is there, and I'm just trying to think, Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett both have playoff experience.
They do.
Scotty, was he? He made the playoffs, but he got hurt that year against Philadelphia. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's not like this is a team that needs to be seasoned, really. Like, these are guys with experience, as we are running out of time here. I think that, so, yeah, the Raptors are making a good trade. I like the trade for the Raptors, but still questions abound.
I think they got a fair deal, is what I will say. And I think people are used to a deal either being a huge success or a huge failure. And so a deal that's like, okay, yeah, kind of feels like maybe a little disappointing, because people maybe have a bit of a binary way of thinking about it. I will say, just to your last point there, Griffin, I do think it would be good for Scottie Barnes to have a playoff series, especially if they were to trade Pascal Siakam.
Yes.
Where it's like, you're the guy, you have the ball. And it does seem like they think of him that way. You know, you heard Darko during his famous rant. The one and only. Talk about the idea that it's like, the way he said it was, Scottie Barnes is going to be the face of this league. And I do think that they genuinely maybe don't feel that he'll be the face of the league, but maybe the face of the team, certainly.
Well, that seems inevitable, and with or without Pascal Siakam, I think you could say that he might already be there.
Sure.
Hey, that's a good thing. Scotty Barnes, All-Star 2024.
Absolutely.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to our first episode of 2024. We missed you. We missed making this content. Chris, I missed you most of all. And if you could look at me and say that back, please, that would be ideal.
I missed you too. But fortunately, they're playing at the Sphere now.
There
so.
It is.
We have fun.
We do. Well, you do. No, thank you all for tuning in. Griffin Porter 97 on X. C House and Jan on X. Yeah, I know you're passionate about that. At HFLC Podcast, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Number one thing, 2024, your New Year's resolution out there. Tell five friends about High Floor, Low Ceiling. That's how we grow this. That's how we make 2024 the year of HFLC. Thank you guys all so much. Chris, any last words?
You're giving someone a New Year's resolution?
Yeah. I'm perfect. So I'm in that position. I tell all my friends about High Floor, Low Ceiling.
Okay.
Any other? Anything else to say?
No. No, just keep on keeping on. Keep the faith. Earth Michael.
Anything else they should keep?
Nope. Billy Joel. Ceilings. Floors.
High and low.
High and low, respectively. Low and high, maybe? Yes.
Enjoy the NFL playoffs. We'll see you next week.
End the episode.
No.
That's an order.
Bye.